1977 or online our website alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. Just call us 1-800-444-1977. Special thanks to the Palestine Center for Public Policy. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening.
Tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Are you eloquent in elephant? Can you converse in chimpanzee? Have a heart-to-heart in horse or chat with a cow? Me neither, but we can definitely speak for them. Hi, I'm Michelle Coppola, inviting you to join me every fourth Friday of the month at 10 a.m. for Voices for the Animals, where we give a voice to the issues, concerns, and welfare of the other non-human creatures on the planet. Until we can have in-depth discussions in dolphin or yak, well, in yak, it's a great way to learn about how we can make this a more humane world. Voices for the Animals, every fourth Friday of the month at 10 a.m., only here on KBOO.
Postmodern, a reaction against the ideas and values of modernism. Avant-garde, new, unusual, and experimental ideas. KBOO, a community radio station that supports both. Join us in our mission to push the status quo by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give between now and May 25th to donate and help us reach our $60,000 spring membership drive goal.
Hi, this is Walt Perezader with the Group Chicago, and you're listening to KBOO FM.
Pacific Radio in San Francisco. This is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, the students at UC Berkeley erect an anti-genocide encampment right at the roots of the free speech movement. We'll have a special report on that one. Also, Genocide Joe and the U.S. rushing more weapons of mass destruction to Israel, but UNRWA left high and dry. We'll untangle the big lies about UNRWA. Also, that and a lot more on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. We are happy to have you along today. There's a lot on the plate coming up later on in this broadcast, and you want to stay tuned. We're going to be speaking to one of the organizers, the leaders in this free speech movement against genocide that unfolded in Berkeley today, UC Berkeley. So we're excited about that. We're going to hear a lot about that. But first, we're going to go right back to the heart of the matter. I'm talking about the expanding genocide in Palestine. And again, joining us to talk about this is Ziad Abbas, of the executive director of the Middle East Children's Alliance. Ziad, welcome back to Flashpoints. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me, Dennis.
Well, it's good to have you with us. I wish it was under happier circumstances, but let's start in Gaza today. Mass graves found at Southern Gaza Hospital raided by Israeli forces. Search teams in Gaza say they've uncovered hundreds of bodies in the grounds of Nasser Medical Complex in the city of Khan Yunis. This is one more. It seems every hospital, Ziad, it turns into a massacre.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the new updates coming all the time right now in Gaza, especially in the areas. What Israel, they say they would withdraw, like from Khan Yunis, like what we witnessed from Khan Yunis before we witnessed that. And tens of reports came after Ashifa hospitals where hundreds of people, they were found in mass graves near Ashifa. And still they are searching there. Right now, we are moving to Khan Yunis because what's going on in Khan Yunis, especially in Nasser Hospital, and where they discovered three mass graves inside the hospital area. And the number actually increased according to the statements and reports coming from Palestine today. 283 bodies found, and they recognize only 42 people out of them, most of them children, women, and other people. Actually, they were handcuffed. They couldn't recognize their bodies because the way how they buried them deep in the sand, and after that they cover it, and after that they add the trash and garbage on that area. But still, the searching teams from the Palestinian defense forces that still working in that to discover, and they are expecting actually hundreds of people, if not thousands, they are reported missing. No one is aware of the accurate number, and to recognize these bodies, some of these bodies actually it will be very hard to recognize who are they. Despite the fact that families, they are searching for their children, searching for their families, members and relatives, and it was very hard. And this is the new era right now, wherever the Israeli hits and invades in part of Gaza Strip, they after that, where you discover more mass graves. It reminds us of many other genocide happening in the world. It reminds us of Rwanda, it reminds us with Vietnam, with Cambodia, and even with Algeria during the French colonialism. Right now, it's coming to remind us to add to that the Palestinians, they are discovering these massive graves. And it will continue, it will not end it here. Because don't forget, we are speaking about over 8,000 people reported missing. And these massive graves, it's a huge issue, like coming right now in the areas when the people try to return back to their houses, to their, and they don't know where are their family members. People disappear inside Gaza. And thousands of people, many reports, we don't know the accurate number about people, they were arrested by the Israelis. And they were asked like months and a half ago or to 2 months maximum, where they reported actually about when they found that mass grave for people, they were arrested, their hands still handcuffed, and they are buried, and they were shot and killed and buried while still their hands cuffed. Today, all the reports coming about these bodies, children, women, and other people they find, and still this is another like era, I can say it, with this genocide where you discover mass graves. Not about the people just they hit like a few days ago, actually less than 3 days ago, when they bombed the house in Rafah and killed 26 people in that house, 16 of them children and 6 women in that house, where the reports can be, they can transfer the bodies, they can find the bodies and transfer. These are the area where Israel, they invade and impose a siege in that area, and of course they attack the people inside these hospitals, not just medical teams, among them doctors, among them nurses, among them all of them, they are human beings. and they shoot them and they bury them inside the hospital under the ground, and they try to recover, and they withdraw later the Palestinian, they find out. This is where we will face right now as Palestinian, that another era where Gaza, where even the Israeli army invaded every village, every camp, every city, every hospital, every mosque, where the people they knew need to go digging and try to find bodies for their lovers and their relatives and their family members.
It is amazing that there's no way to keep formal track of the situation. Everything about this is in a way unprecedented in terms of the inability of people to figure out in this modern world who's living and who's dead. Every Palestinian I talk to, Ziad, and I know you know this, has a story, has 10 stories, and a lot of them have tales that have no ending because people can't figure out what's going on, who's alive, whose children made it through. And this is the reality, even as massive weapon shipments are being sent to Israel by the U.S.
Yeah. And this is something like I can say, yes, absolutely. I hate that when we try to mention the number. And yes, I agree with you totally. Everyone has a story. Everyone has a family. Everyone has a neighbor, friends, etc. And by having, even when we talk with our colleagues in the ground in Gaza or our partners there, and of course they say it like, they are worried about the day when this, someday, I mean, this genocide will stop. The other big shock that the people they will face about who is killed, who is missing, what happened inside Gaza. And right now they are living in this reality. They speak, no one in Gaza, when you talk with them, they can tell you about tens of people they are related to, they are killed, or some of them even disappeared. Talk about journalists, talk about a student in school, if there will be like a school. It's hard to imagine Gaza Strip in the future. If these children right now will survive this genocide, how will be able to go back to school, or all these universities destroyed, mosques, all of this. But actually, everyone has a story. Everyone in Gaza Strip impacted by this kind of numbers. We are speaking about it as numbers, because they are connected. This is their memory. This is their childhood. These are their neighbors, relatives, brothers, sons, husbands, etc. And it's a story. And in the world, actually, even when you hear all these kind of statements coming, including United Nations, that they speak, they are worried about these kind of reports coming about mass graves. We are in 2024. And the world experienced this kind of genocide in different parts of the world in the past. And right now, they are speaking, they are worried about this report. What they do about it, it's nothing almost, because it's happening still. I'm talking with you while it's happening in Gaza. Right now, everything shifted to north of Gaza. Even the first town it was invaded by the Israelis when the ground troops took in. The first town, actually, it was bombed after October 7th. Beit Hanun and Beit Lahia and all this area. Right now they came back. They are bombing. I was watching a report 1 hour ago, actually, about people they were moving, actually evacuating from Beit Hanun in north of Gaza, where the mass starvation, and they are leaving Beit Hanun to Jabalia refugee camp, where there are other attacks. They are leaving from this attack to other attack. Now what Israel doing right now in Gaza Strip, they are speaking about Rafah. They are already attacking Rafah by bombing all the time, and the number of the people they are killed every day in Rafah. The idea is that ground troops didn't invade inside Rafah yet, but actually they are bombing there. But right now, Israel, they are in the rest of Gaza Strip, they are bombing what was bombed more than one time before. And they are targeting the people they are already survived. All that we are 200 days right now, 200 days for this ongoing genocide for the Palestinians. And right now targeting these people. I was watching the report, like tiny and short reports about the people evacuating from Beit Hanun to Jabalia. like they are escaping from this kind of bombing to other kind of bombing. But this is the survival issue. When my friend Iyadin shot a refugee camp, which he was moving in less than 5 square miles, he spent like over 4 months to moving inside north of Gaza, just following his luck, he and his family moving around. And the bombing is going on. Yesterday, actually, the report for us today, even they are shelling everywhere, Nusayrat refugee camp in Deir al-Balah, and even in Nusayrat, in the middle area where they bombed the hospital, Al-Awda hospital. And the Israeli tanks bombed it, and there were more reports about that is coming from there. So they are still doing what they are doing since the beginning of this genocide, and still until now it's not stopped.
And we have a big job trying to get the word out, because you wouldn't know it in the streets of America. And the idea that the administration feels comfortable. You say, you know, people have been bombed once, twice, three times. They're bombing the dust into ashes. The density of the bombing has another record is broken in terms of the amount of tonnage and bombs dropped on this tiny Gaza Strip. And yet the world stands by and watches them ship more and more 1,800, 2,000-pound bunker busters, these sending 50 F-35A fighter jets. It's just unbelievable. And it's hard, you know, and in this, it's really frustrating because, and we're going to do a lot of reporting on this, but they made a special point when they announced the new budget in Washington, D.C. They made sure to tell the world that there was no money for UNRWA. This is sort of like a participation in the genocide.
Yeah, no doubt. By being silent for the world, I'm speaking all the world, I'm speaking about all the governments in the world, except the government, they are taking a stand. But even how much they are doing intervention to stop this genocide, it's nothing. Right now, killing a Palestinian for Israel is killing a Palestinian. It's very easy that no one hold them accountable for that. I'm speaking about government, and I'm speaking about the international community, United Nations. No one is holding Israel accountable. Even the international criminal courts and justice courts, etc. The idea this is ongoing. And now killing a Palestinian has become very easy. And maybe the world, these countries, they are normalized. I remember a few times we were reporting about the situation. I told you where they start speaking, these governments. They are not speaking about stop the genocide as much. They speak about how many trucks getting together and to increase the aid. Hey, more few trucks coming, etc. And the idea is now Israel, what they are doing, targeting the Palestinian everywhere, killing the Palestinian. It's easy for the soldiers. It's not just about officers and the leaders of the government. They made it easy for any soldier, anyone can kill a Palestinian anytime in the way they think it. And they film it. The problem, there are many footages coming about what happened inside Gaza Strip and how they treat the people in the ground. Some of these materials is coming through the social media of the Israeli soldiers, where Israel right now, they try to put the pressure on their soldiers, don't publish anything, because the people, they are aware, they follow up, they get the news from them too. And killing a Palestinian has become something, and I see the international community, I'm speaking here about governments, become numb about it, and they are doing nothing about it. And this is the main call coming, the main thing you hear it from anyone in Gaza. Whenever you talk with Gaza, the moment you ask them, how are you doing? They ask you, where is the people in the world? Where are the new, these governments, these countries? They are value the human being life, the children life, the women rights, all of this. And they are, of course, they are questioning, and they know the answer. That, and for the international law, and for them, it's very clear that it's only apply for certain people, not for the other people. And for all these governments watching and witnessing this genocide, And they see that they know the reports. They know, because some of these countries, they know already what's going on, because their weapons, they support Israel, they help Israel, they give them weapons, they give them money, they give them everything, and they are not doing anything for that. Now, for the Palestinians, how to live, it's about survival for them, and it's about survival, and it's about dignity and freedom. The people, they think, yeah, we are paying a very heavy price, but we want to stop this right now, because every day, every hour, every minute, people, they are losing their life. And many Absolutely. Of them, they are children. They are children dying.
We're running out of time, and I do want to come back, Ziad, to the West Bank, which has been under a hell of fire for days. And they are, it does seem like the Israelis are seizing the moment to do as much damage as they can, to destroy as much of the West Bank as they can. That's how they work, right? Knock it down and then take it over.
Yes. Right. It's what's going on right now. I'm speaking with you about West Bank. They are actually invading many areas at the same time. Right now, they are in Jericho, and at least, this is a few minutes ago, one Palestinian injured inside Jericho. And when I speak about Jericho, it's a city. There are some villages and refugee camps, Tal Sultan, Mukhayam Akbat Jabr, etc., Akbat Jabr refugee camp, etc., and they are invading there. But the huge thing that was happening, it was due in North Shams and Tul Karim, where 14 Palestinians, they were killed there. In 60 hours, they invaded this tiny refugee camp in Tul Karim. 14 people, they were killed, among them children. And even these kind of reports coming from there, the amount of destruction happening there inside and this refugee camp, it's unbelievable. According to the description and many reports, I watch the reports, and I read the reports coming from there, and they say it's like earthquakes. In 16 hours, 14 people killed. They destroyed the whole camp, all the infrastructure destroyed. They bulldozed all the streets, no water, no electricity, no phone. And they invaded people's houses, interrogate the people inside their houses. You know what they call it? What they did in this refugee camp in 60 hours? This is the tiny experience of Gaza Strip. We want to show you this is what we do in Gaza Strip. And of course, they did this in Jenin wow. refugee camp. They did in Tul Karim refugee camp, Nur Shams. It's not far from Nur Shams. And yeah, it's continuing. On the other hand, the settlers, they continue to do what they are doing. And they are lashing everywhere and attacking the Palestinian farmers in their farms, Palestinian villagers in their village, in their houses. And still, West Bank, it's another era coming right now. This kind of escalation, it's moving very fast and dark targeting the Palestinians. Some of the Palestinians killed by the Israeli army, others they are killed by the Israeli settlers. For the Palestinians, both, they are the same. They are the occupation. This is the colonial system taking part in Palestine. Genocide in Gaza, targeting every Palestinian everywhere, even in East Jerusalem. I don't want to go. There are a lot of reports coming. But this is something happening everywhere inside Palestine. And to be a Palestinian these days, to be a Palestinian everywhere. If you are in Palestine, you are targeted to be killed. To be a Palestinian outside of Palestine, you are targeted, because if you raise yourself, the moment you say Palestine or about the try to express your feeling, to share your feeling in the streets, in the university, look what happened to the students everywhere in the universities and all of this. You become a target. And of course, for the allies of Palestinians. But you know what? There is a hope. People in this, I spoke about governments, but still for people, yeah, this solidarity movement expanding and moving and working.
Yes, it is.
People like,
yes, it is.
Yeah, this is something like, we hope this will be more protective to stop this genocide and what's going on in Palestine.
Well, certainly the Middle East Children's Alliance is a part of that. And as always, Ziad, we appreciate the incredibly good and frontline information about what's going on in Gaza and the West Bank and in East Jerusalem. It is, of course, a genocide. The whole world is watching, and we're going to keep a microscope on. In a moment, we're going to be talking to some folks on the campus of UC Berkeley who are very focused as well. But Ziad, we'll talk to you tomorrow and as soon as possible to keep an eye on what's going on as we monitor this U.S. Armed genocide. Be safe, Ziad. Thank you. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to hold the music break because we're running late and we've got a lot to get on. I wanted to bring back... Okay, we actually do need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll speak to Arun Gupta. And later, we're going to be joined by an organizer for what's going on the ground in the world of UC Berkeley, where the students are speaking against genocide. Stay with us. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. I think we've got Arun Gupta on his bike heading towards New York University, where there has been quite a bit of activity. Arun, are you biking or where are you?
I am biking through the streets of Lower Manhattan. I got my helmet and my lights on. But,
good.
Yeah. And I was just at the demo, so excuse me if I'm a little out of breath because I'm trying to get there.
I
was live streaming earlier. And there's over 500 people, really spirited, but the it's in front of the Stern School of Business in the plaza. Apparently, protesters took over the plaza. It had been barricaded, and NYU, which, according to students, is heavily implicated in the Israeli genocide and colonialism through its many billions of dollars of investment, ordered the students to leave. Students are defying them. And while I was there with some other journalists, we were watching the NYPD, which is the seventh largest standing army in the world, 40,000 plus cops, muster its forces to move in. And apparently they have moved in a bus. And so we're going to try and see what's going on, navigating the hairy streets of Manhattan. Right now I am going the wrong way on Broadway.
You're going the right way if you're heading towards the protest.
Oh, and here we are. Here's about 50 cops lined up on Broadway. Right outside one of the NYU campuses. I'm now going the wrong way. If folks know the geography of Lower Manhattan and where NYU is, it's located on Washington Square Park at 4th Street. And so I am just very close to it now, hoping to see. I don't hear any chanting at the moment. I can hear some noise.
I know the law school, the NYU law school is right there. We know that many of the law students are very engaged. I'm wondering if any of them are walking around there. What's going on?
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, I'm approaching the demo right now. There's still hundreds of people. They were in the streets. Now they appear to be all on the sidewalks, no evidence. I can see that anyone has been arrested. Let me ask, have there been any arrests?
Yes.
Excuse me?
I don't think there have been any so far, but they just had a police officer over there and I don't know.
Okay, so I'm talking to eyewitnesses. They say they don't think there's been any arrests. Before the protests had taken over much of the street, now they're all on the sidewalk itself. There's an increased police presence, but there's still hundreds, I'd say at least 500 people in front of the Stern School of Business. So these protests are breaking out all over. I was just at the new school as well, where there are about 150 to 200 students, and it's all a result of what's been going on at Columbia University, where last week the administration, there was a large student protest, peaceful protest on campus in an area designated for protest, right? As completely peaceful as can be. And so the president, who had been hauled before the House, before Congress, to basically play this Republican game of fake charges of anti-Semitism and danger, her response to that was to basically ban the protest under just a really Orwellian excuse of safety. And so the students could not be arrested because they were in a legal area and they are Columbia University students and the NYPD is not allowed to arrest them. And so what the university did was to suspend all the students, and then the NYPD moved into the arrest them. But all that is done is to cause the demonstrations to increase. So Columbia University has shut down the campus. You can't get on it unless you're a student. But there were images today of what looked like thousands of protesters and a faculty walkout. And the Faculty Senate is apparently considering a censure of the Columbia University president. We now have this large protest at NYU. There were protests at Yale where students were arrested. Also in New York City, there is a protest ongoing right now. I was at it about an hour ago at the new school, about 150 students or so on Fifth Avenue and 13th Street inside and outside the university. Other universities are also, protests are popping off, such as at Berkeley. And of course, there's a whole fiasco at USC where they preemptively canceled the speech of the valedictorian, basically because she was a Muslim and she had studied a USC basically minor called for resistance to genocide. So that was enough to get her canceled. And the protests have been so widespread against what USC has done that they now cancel all their speakers, including the noted feminist icon Billie Jean King and the Hollywood director John Chu. And so what we're seeing is just this attempt by the elites, by the ruling class, by politicians to suppress any sort of dissent against this horrific genocide, and people are not having it. And they are, it's only just increasing the resistance and protest.
I want to, before we let you go, and it's great to hear this live report from the ground, but we've talked a lot about the fake setup of UNRWA. And once again, the big lie is used to eliminate any funds for UNRWA. In fact, the Speaker of the House made a point of saying that there would be no money in this budget with all the $1.8 billion for weapons, no money for UNRWA. And that's the big lie, and that's the media's fault, right? They're to blame. They lie about things like this.
I think in a lot of ways that's true. You know, Israeli propaganda, there's a lot of people now suddenly rushing into the streets. The cops may be attacking. So I'm not sure what's going on exactly now. Hundreds of people, and I saw cops smirking, telling people to run. So, but people are encouraging protesters to come back. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on, whether this is some sort of attempt
Stay
to
with
intimidate
it.
Protesters.
Stay with it.
There's also, right now it sounds like there's a religious chant going on, so prayer going on, Muslim prayer. So, you know, we'll have this scenario of the NYPD attacking people in religious, basically having prayer. In a religious service on the steps of NYU. So the air is definitely charged. You can feel it. I've been in thousands of demonstrations. And
yes,
there's a feeling right now of danger, you know, and that something is about to let loose. I'm trying to get a closer look to see what's going on. Joining crowds as they're crossing the street. So I'm now in the protest itself. I hope you can still hear me.
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah, it's not... There's a number of young people, Muslims, who are kneeling in prayer, and hundreds of people gathered around them. I think that was just a panic is what happened. You know, this is the type of thing that happens in crowds where one or two people panic and suddenly the whole crowd starts to follow suit. So it appears to have calmed down. It appears to have calmed down for now. I'm not talking, and eyewitnesses telling me that they saw cops walking down, which is not what it may have spurred the crowd to panic. So, and we're live at New York University with hundreds of people. It's peaceful. Remember that. If you hear anything about violence, it's police violence. There's no violence whatsoever coming from the protesters. Completely peaceful here. Lots of people milling around. There are quite a few cops, but they have stayed. What the NYPD usually does is they station cops like one or two blocks away, and we saw a large group of them, over 50 of them, lined up, and they come in en masse. We're now on the grounds of the plaza itself, where there are all these tents that are set up. You know, this is in solidarity. Clearly with what's going on at Columbia University, the tents are ringed by hundreds of students. I would actually say there's probably about 1,000 people there. The tents, it's a large area, you know, a few thousand square feet, looks to be like about 40 or 50 tents, and students have arms locked protecting the tents. And inside, there's another group of students in a circle in the interior part of the tent encampment, who are sitting down with their arms locked in a circle. It's very spirited, very defiant, and very peaceful.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking to Arun Gupta. He's on his bicycle on the streets of New York City downtown by New York University. And there is an ongoing protest, an active protest of about, he says, he's estimating around 1,000 people, as many as 1,000, shall we say. This action happening now in downtown Manhattan is part of many actions happening from one end of this country to another. In a little bit, we're going to be going to the campus of UC Berkeley, where another encampment has been set up at the heart and the home and the birth, where the birth of the free speech movement took place. But we are now in the street with Arun Gupta, who is
There's cops and riots here who are moving. What's funny is they're surrounded by people with cameras, but they have something was thrown. It's not clear what's going on. It's just big deal, a little water bottle. The cops are forming a line. I am going to give it a little room because I don't feel like getting arrested.
Try not to get arrested.
So, but they formed a line. They have the flexi cuffs, you know, so we'll see, you know, what they're going to do. There's some movement. Not entirely clear what's happening. You know, people are still surrounding the encampment. They're chanting, hey, hey, ho, ho, the occupation has got to go. There are Palestinian flags that you can see flying above the crowd, lit up by the street lights. Lots of flash cameras going off as the cops for now are surrendered. Now suddenly someone is telling them, I'm not sure, a bunch of people left. I think maybe I would guess that they might have been told that don't stay unless you're willing to get arrested. So let me see if I can find someone to give me an idea of
all right, see if you can find someone. I'll just tell people you're listening to Flashpoints. This is a live broadcast.
Live on Flashpoints. And
Pacifica Radio, KPFA in the Bay Area. Yes.
Can you tell me what's going on?
It looks like they're holding a line around the tent. The cops, we saw them all sort of come in all in riot gear, but everyone's saying students hold your ground, NYPD back down. So there's a moment when folks start running, but then you can see the leaders are saying sort of don't run, hold your ground. Now everyone's running. It's going back and forth.
Yeah, so it's definitely, there's a panic, a little bit of panic. It looks like there may be some shoving. People are walking.
They're hitting them with clubs.
They're what?
They're hitting them with billy clubs.
You saw that?
I just saw one swinging. I didn't see anybody.
Okay, so a report that of billy clubs being swung. I'm going to try and get out of here because I have a bike and it's not the best idea to be in the middle of a riot with a bike.
No. Be safe.
So, and remember, this is police violence, right? It's never coming from protesters. I've been in so many demonstrations in New York City where the police are always the instigators. You know, they'll use the flimsiest excuses, such as that someone threw an empty water bottle and that justifies them bashing people's heads in. So I'm trying to see what's going on. Excuse me.
Arun, this is what we're going to do. Keep an eye on this. We're going to have to go to the UC Berkeley campus and talk about what's going on there. But we're going to come back to you before we go
here.
Off the air.
I'll stay here.
You stay here. We'll be back to you.
I'll be ready to give you an update.
Thank you. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. Mike, do we need to take a break to get our next guest?
Yeah.
We're ready. Beautiful. You are gonna, we're gonna take you from the streets of New York City to UC Berkeley. We're joined by Malak. She's a co-president of the Berkeley Law Students for Justice, Students for Justice in Palestine. Welcome to Flashpoints, Malak. We're really delighted to have you with us. What's going on? Where are you now? Describe what happened in the last couple of hours on your university.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
I'm outside right now at the Free Palestine encampment at the site of Sproul Plaza and the Mario Savio Steck, who was one of the founders of the free speech movement. We're joining in that legacy and making history where we have around 12 plus tents on the steps filled with over 70 plus organizers, students, alumni, faculty in here that are camping out. We're doing this because we're inspired by the student movement in Colombia, who we consider the heart of the student movement, but also because we are standing in solidarity with our people in Palestine who are experiencing day 198 of this genocide. At noon, we had a rally that had over 150 plus people. We had people demanding and talking about our four demands, which is one, to end the silence, to demand that the UC make a statement and categorize this as a genocide in Gaza. Two, financial divestment, to ensure that the UC stop their contracts with any weapons arms manufacturers. Three, academic boycott, to disentangle themselves and sever all ties with quote-unquote Israeli institutions, including ending their global study abroad program to Israel. And four, to stop the repression. I'm the student that got assaulted by UC Berkeley Law Professor Catherine Fisk, as well as there's been multiple other pro-Palestine students that have been attacked, silenced, and faced disciplinary action. It's been a beautiful showing. We're going to keep going. We're going to stay here. We're ready to get suspended, expelled, arrested, and we're going to keep going until we achieve divestment.
Are you encouraged, inspired by the fact that you are among students all over the country from coast to coast, from sea to sea, that are standing against what people all over the world recognize as a genocide?
Yes, I'm so just amazed and honored to be standing in solidarity with my comrades and to be making history in this moment. We really address a national united front where we planned this encampment today along with U Michigan, among other schools that popped out. We're the first California institution to do this, the first UC. So we're beautiful to be holding up. It's really beautiful to be holding up the representation from the west side and from the west coast of the country. We are one heart. We beat together, and we will continue fighting until we achieve liberation as a collective, both here and in Palestine.
Talk a little bit about the violence that happened at the Dean of the Law School's house. Could you remind people what happened, and were you surprised? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so that was a university-funded, school-sponsored dinner. It was held at the dean's house, but it was a public school event that was open invite for all third-year law students to commemorate their final few weeks at the school. We had put out a wider call to boycott this dinner, but a group of us wanted to use this as an opportunity to talk to our peers and inform them of the specific statistics on where our tuition money was going. As y'all may know, the UC has invested over $2 billion into weapons arms manufacturer contracts, including with companies like BlackRock, Lockheed Martin, and Boeing, among many more. When I was there, I decided to stand up, say Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, an Arabic Muslim salutation that translates to peace and blessings on you all. And then I talked about how this dinner was being held on the last day of Ramadan. And that's when Professor Catherine Fisk came from the second tier of the courtyard down the steps, put her arms around my neck, tugged at my hijab, grabbed at my shirt, tried to take my microphone and my phone, and did not allow me to speak. I hadn't even spoken about Palestine before she did this. I was shocked. I've experienced a wave of repression, whether it be being put on Canary Mission or being doxxed or my student group, my SJP being threatened to be shut down. But never once did I expect a Berkeley law professor to put her hands on me. And specifically just because she deems me a threat because I wore a hijab, because I'm Muslim, because I speak Arabic. So, yeah, it was very shocking.
Well, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and we're talking about an encampment that was set up on the campus of UC Berkeley. I might add the where the birth of the free speech movement took place. This is a good context, and it's about genocide. What are your thoughts about the U.S.? Yesterday, I guess, or the day before, they announced this $1.8 billion package that was passed out of the House, it's chock full of weaponry the Israelis, and they exclude UNRWA. They assure people that there's not a cent in there for UNRWA. So, weapons for the genocide. What are your thoughts? How do you respond? I guess that's why you're out.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. That's exactly why we're out here. This goes beyond just university ties with weapons arms manufacturers, but our very own tax dollars are going to this. So all of us are complicit. It's just ridiculous to me, you know. As a law student, many of my friends have over $250,000 in loans. So I find it ridiculous that our government cannot go and use that money towards ending student debt, towards health care, towards housing, towards any other type of right that would really benefit the health and safety of our communities, and instead decides to stand on the side of genocide and send it to another entity just for the sake of some economic benefit or some political partnership. It's just disappointing to say the least, and we deserve so much more.
So did you get... can I assume that you got tremendous support from the administration, that they really are happy about this and support your cause?
Oh, definitely not. I mean, they've definitely responded in the past with a lot of repression, whether it be threats of sanctions or disciplinary proceedings. Quite frankly, we have had the tent set up since around 1:32 p.m. We have not heard notice from the university. I do think that Berkeley does profit off of its reputation for being a progressive school that engages in organizing. The way that they now lend credit to the founders of the free speech movement when they used to arrest them and criminalize them speaks to this. So what I predict to happen is that they will keep us without any notice for 2 days, and then they will threaten disciplinary action. And when we continue to stay, which we will, then they will bring in UCPD and Berkeley PD. So I'll keep y'all updated. We haven't heard any notice yet, but looking at NYU and Columbia and the response, I expect something very, I expect to be criminalized, and I expect it to be a escalated response.
And yet you move forward. You have a lot at risk. You're a law student. You have your whole future in front of you. Why do you feel it's important to step over the line now at this moment?
I'm a Palestinian. I'm the daughter of Palestinian immigrants from Abu Ghosh and Al-Khalil. I've had my great-grandfather that was a freedom fighter and was tortured in prison for this cause. I've had multiple family members die as a result of this cause, be expelled. Many of my family has yet to return since they were expelled in 1967, and I now stand on the privilege of attending one of the best and top 10 law schools in this nation. And I believe it is my collective responsibility and all our collective responsibility to insert the word Palestine everywhere, whether it be in our workspaces or our school dinners and every platform possible, until Palestine is free from the river to the sea. So quite frankly, I'm standing on the side of justice, and they can do whatever they want, but I will continue standing with my people in Palestine, and we all will.
Beautiful. We thank you for joining us, Malak. We hope you'll come back and keep us posted as this thing unfolds.
Sure.
We're right by side there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Be safe. And you are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. What we're going to do is take a short musical break, and we're going to see if we can catch back up with Arun and see what's happening with that protest on, I guess it's sort of the Lower East Side of Manhattan. Stay with us.
I used to think that life was so easy, had all the time and I gave it out freely. You never know what you have until it's gone, gone, gone. I never used to think about the ending, never thought about the light I was spending. I didn't know what I had till it was gone, gone, gone. So close your
listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Last we left Arun Gupta, he was on the edge of a protest, or really in the middle. Arun, where are you now? What happened? Anybody get arrested yet?
So a lot of dramatic developments. There have been arrests. Yes. The cops, NYPD, have come in and completely trashed the encampment. I saw people being led away by cops individually with their hands behind their back. So I'm assuming that they were arrested with the plexicuffs. There's a group of them that are sitting down. I'm also live streaming right now on Twitter as we speak. And they're also being arrested. I see cops leading them away. Folks can also see the live stream at Arun Indy on Twitter. I can definitely see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people being led away, each by a cop being arrested. This demonstration was completely peaceful. You know, let's not forget that. It's the university who called their hired goons in the NYPD. You know, when people wonder why there are over 40,000 cops in New York City, I've been covering protests there for over 30 years. And it's the only reason they ever need so many is to suppress protests. And there are hundreds and hundreds of cops all around here in riot gear. They have all the various vans and buses and patrol cars and SUVs. They are just such a lavishly funded military-style force. I can see a lot more people being arrested now. You know, it looks like at least another dozen, maybe another two dozen. And it's, again, I want to emphasize this, NYU, who all the students and alumni have spoken to, claim the university is heavily invested in the Israeli colonial state. They do have a campus in Tel Aviv, so that's, it would be surprising if they're invested in the colonial state, in weapons makers, in military contractor, in the surveillance state. And that's one of the things the students were asking for the university to show where its investments are and to divest from military and weapons contractors. So lots and lots of cops. I can see more arrestees being let out. But, you know, this happened last week at Columbia, and all it did was cause the protest there to explode. You know, I'm going to be back tomorrow, and I expect to see that there'll be more protests. People are climbing. I'm over at a retaining wall, a 5 foot high retaining wall. People are climbing up while the cops are trying to prevent them from coming up. So it's definitely, you know, we're seeing the velvet glove of the ruling class has been taken off. You know, they're using their repressive fists. And but this is nothing new. You know, There are more cops, riot cops, who are walking down the street. I think it's just an intimidation tactic, but I am going to keep past their edge to ensure that I don't get slapped. Cops love the NYPD loves to track people. They use the intrusion moves. A lot of people are yelling at us. Well, there are thousands of people out here. You know, when I was first out here about 3 hours ago, I'd estimate there were maybe 500 people. So, you know, this is just galvanizing the anger. You know, you can't even peacefully protest genocide anymore. And Dennis, you and I were talking about UNRWA earlier. You know, I just, again, from decades of writing about war and protest and the repressive state, there's this constant pattern where if the victim actually speaks up against the atrocities, that makes the aggressor, the colonial state, the genocidal state, even angrier, and they double down on their atrocities, such as cutting the funds off of UNRWA, which is basically spreading the genocide of famine that is well underway now. And that's because UNRWA dares, and the Palestinians dare say that Israel and the U.S. are committing genocide. You know, and one last important point I want to add is, as we've talked
30
about,
seconds.
You know, the fact that Biden, pressured Israel not to retaliate, and it was successful, shows that the U.S. does have a lot of control over Israel, and Biden could have stopped the genocide at any point. Now there's about 50 demonstrators coming in with a banner, and they're directly marching past the riot cops. So, you know, people are really defiant. They are not, by ending the encampment, they are not ending this protest.
All right, sign off for us. Sign off for us.
Thank you. Okay, this is Arun Gupta reporting live for Flashpoints on KPFA on the demonstration.
You're listening to KBOO, Portland Community Radio. Yeah!
I'm out to sing songs. It'll prove to you that this is your world. And that if it's hit you pretty hard and knocked you down, for a dozen loops, no matter how...